Counselor Accents Podcast. Two school counselors who love their jobs. Oh, and they happen to have Southern accents too. Bless their hearts.
I'm Laura Redcourt.
And I'm Kim Crumbly. And together we are Counselor Accents.
Kim, prepare to be amazed. We have Joy Winchester with us. And she is a treasure right here in the state of Alabama. But she's a treasure for the whole world, really. Joy, you have done amazing things. You're with the Early Childhood Education program in Alabama.
That is true. I work for the Department of Early Childhood Education.
Yes. And you have pioneered conscious discipline in the state of Alabama. I've done a little bit of stalking, so I don't know if you want to go ahead and get the restraining order together now or later, but you are the reason that the state of Alabama is number one in the nation for conscious discipline implementation. Hats off to you.
Oh, well, thank you. It was really with the help of the teachers.
Absolutely. Kudos, because it's changing the lives of our little ones and our teachers and families. It branches out further than just that student. So thank you for all that you've done. And we want to know more.
Yes. So why don't we start with you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we've got a list of questions for you.
Great. So a little bit about me is, I am a teacher first, started teaching and realized I was losing more kids than I was helping. And so I started on this mental health path. I didn't understand why I was making these amazing lesson plans, but the kids didn't care. And so, started going to little sit down meetings at UAB and, you know, and they would say, oh, we're doing this topic on adolescence and mental health, and, you know, started being sent to oppositional defiance and all these things. But it was making sense, but it wasn't making sense to my teacher brain. I'm a teacher first. And so mental health was phenomenal, but I was missing something. And so I ended up getting a mental health endorsement through the Department of Early Childhood as well, just because of all the mental health stuff I've stalked and dabbled in is probably a good word. And then ended up falling into neuroscience. And neuroscience was it. It answered the questions. It literally took, okay, now I get it. I now understand. I've been taught how to teach, but I've never been taught how the brain learns. And learning is a biological process. And when you start to put the understanding of the neuroscience with the teaching pedagogy, and then you throw in the mental health, that sounds complicated, but it's actually conscious discipline. And so what Becky Bailey has done is taken three areas, put them together, and made them digestible for teachers. And that's where I started using it. Started using it with my children, raised my own personal children on it. I get tickled a lot because we are a blended family. And so when my oldest child came to me in our marriage, I got her at 12. And I tell everyone I got my baby at 12. And she probably taught me the most about conscious discipline because I raised my biological children on conscious discipline. And so we never really, it was just norm here. Well, when the 12-year-old moved in, I would say to her, let's talk about this. You're going to problem solve. Let's pull these skills. First, I found out she had no skills. She had no executive skills. She couldn't problem solve. She was always looking for the threat. She was always looking to manipulate the situation to protect herself. And one day, I remember she looked at me and she said, just beat me.
Wow.
Get me. She goes, I would rather you whip me with a belt than have to sit and talk to you about this. And it broke my heart. And, you know, she had been living with her mom. And then when we got married, she came and lived with us. And it broke my heart that she would have rather got spanked than discussed the outcomes, the outcome of her actions, where she could learn from it, how she could grow. It was more uncomfortable to process. And so when I realized that, I realized that maybe that's what was going on with a lot of kids in my classrooms. Maybe that was going on with a lot of these behaviors. Maybe that was going on when I became a coach with mine. I hate this word, resistant teachers. In other words, if people are not understanding that when you're stressed and overwhelmed, you're fearful, you're in fight or flight, you don't have access to those higher thinking skills that make us human. And so therefore, we fall back on our old animal skills, which aren't very productive in human society. And so she taught me quite a bit about attachment, because she had kind of been bounced around a little. And now she's 26 and she's a nurse, and I'm so proud of her. But it's truly interesting to me that at 12, when she should have had those skills pretty solid, you know, they developed till 25, but still she should have been having some of them. She didn't have them. And it was because no one challenged her to build those. So those are kind of where I come from. I have worked in homeless inner city. The kids no one wants are my favorite. The kids that will throw a chair at you and say, call my mama, I'm ready to go home. And I usually will respond, not today, buddy. They found someone a tad crazier than you. We making it to the bell rings. We are making it to the Because at the end of the day, if I throw a chair and you call me and you send me home, I don't care if I'm getting a whooping. I got away from you.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted. My behavior is working. And so conscious discipline helps people understand. But what I love about conscious discipline is teachers first, adults first. You cannot be a wackadoodle and expect your children to be normal. You just can't. And so if you're not going to pour into yourself, and I have had teachers who I've coached through conscious discipline who have started therapy because they realize there's too much of their own baggage to access their own executive functioning skills.
Wow.
And it's a great process to go through. And I think as school counselors and teachers even, sometimes we get triggered. And I know as a coach, if I'm going in to talk to a teacher, you know, sometimes I'll say to you, what do you want me to do here? Because if you just want me to say this child is bad and they need to be sent home, you got the wrong person walking in your door. I'm sorry. Because see, if I send them home, they're going back to where they want to go. The back to the same place, let's just be honest, that ill-prepared them. So right now, we have got to do the hard work. And I think that's, I'm reading a great book right now. Ooh, and I can't remember the author. Oh, yes, I do. Nancy Silla, S-I-L-L-A. It's called Executive Functions, The Missing Piece in Academics. Ooh. It is a beautiful companion to conscious discipline. Because what I see our schools doing, Joy, listen, just make them sit down and listen. They can just sit down and listen. We'll get them taught. That's actually not true. See, I can make anyone sit down and listen, but that doesn't mean they're taking in that knowledge and using it. And what this book talks about is today our kids are different. A decade ago, you did not have anything you want information-wise in this phone. Anything you want. You want to know how big Saturn is? Google it. You want to know how to make chocolate pie? Google it. What we have to do now as teachers, and this is really cool, is schools have said, let's give them access to anything they need, technology, computers, anything they need right here. They have physical access, but we forgot about cognitive access. And cognitive access.
I've got to go to the altar. Oh my gosh.
So, you know, and I even find that with when I coach teachers now, I no longer come in as a content expert. I no longer say, let me describe for you the pedagogy behind what this child is doing. Because in all fairness, they can find anything they want on conscious discipline here. You can find 1-2-3 magic on here, which is not a good program, but you can find it. You can find how to, and this is a terrible thing to say, but I'll just go ahead and say it, how to spank a child without leaving marks so you don't get the law called on you, right? You can find anything on here, anything. my goal as a coach is to help that teacher be curious to access what she wants and then take that 1% chance, that 1% change. That's all I'm asking you to change. Don't change everything overnight. You'll become an alcoholic. 1%. You only change 1%, right? And when that 1% is normal, it starts to feel comfortable. Then you do another percent. Then you do another one. But if you take conscious discipline, you read that whole book. And you wake up on, I don't know, you read it over the summer. And you decide, August, when you open your classroom, you are going to be conscious discipline to the T. What you're going to end up being is a conscious decorator. I mean, your room is going to have stars and everything in it, but whatever. And you're going to be a hot mess because you've thrown out your old discipline strategies without perfecting your new ones. So what we ask you to do, keep your old stuff. Don't throw that out yet. But when you add your new stuff and you see it working, then slowly remove the old stuff so you can learn to walk steadily on your 2 feet in conscious discipline. But it's adults first.
We have just gotten started, and I want to cry. I want to throw my pen. I told you, Kim, did I not tell you?
You did. You really, really did. And already, my wheels are turning, and I know our listeners' wheels are turning. So adults first. I love that mm-hmm. so much. I love common sense. And I love that you said tickled. I'm a little bit tickled because that is such a Southern thing, Joy. I appreciate that. But adults first. What next? And how do adults then implement this with children? What would you tell us our next step is?
So I think your first step is to be honest with yourself. You're human. When you became a teacher, you didn't throw out your human card. You're going to have bad days and you're going to have great days. And guess what? Kids learn from them both. So when you have a bad day, show them how you bounce back. You know, you can say, I don't know how many times I've said to children in classroom, I'm angry. My voice got a little too high and I should not have said that. I'm going to take a step back and take a breath because I'm not the person I want to be right now. That there's all these things out there right now. Mindfulness. And all these, what else? I practice the pause. There's all these things that make you just stop. One of the things I have found is before I engage, when I find myself bubbling up, and guess what? Finding yourself bubbling up, that's called metacognition. That's an executive functioning skill. What that means is when you're stressed, your access to that skill drops. This is why when you're fighting with your husband, fighting with your children, because the closer you are to someone, the bigger the reaction. It's human nature, okay? So when you find you're fighting, you don't realize how mad you're getting. And that metacognition is huge. How many times do we ask kids, when you get angry, turn and walk away? That's metacognition. That turns on around 3 or 4 and develops until 25. But yet we expect a 4-year-old to say, I am angry and I would like the green crayon and not the blue crayon. We expect a 10-year-old to say, excuse me, there was a fire alarm today. And FYI, I didn't get to do the math before the reading and that's not my pattern. So can you please redo the day? And anything that shifts our day shifts the kids. So step one, I would tell teachers, know yourself. Know your triggers. We were joking. This is terrible. I shouldn't even put this on here. Y'all probably going to cut this. We were joking. We were saying, to graduate from a teacher program, I need to put you in a room, and I need to throw a chair at you, spit on you, hit you, tell you your mom eats hot dogs, make you as mad as I can, so you can figure out which one sends you over. I can be hit, spit on, kicked, chair throw at me. I'm going with the flow. Whatever. Life's good. You know, life's fine. Let a child whine. And I'm like, yep, you're worth jail time. I can be working with a nonverbal child who is destroying property, and I have all the empathy in the world. I'm thinking, okay, how do I build scaffold? I got a scaffold up to these scaffolds. And a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old, whatever, in the corner goes, oh, I can't find my book bag. And I will be like, you go home. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So know your triggers. I think also know some brain facts. And I'm not talking about the hypothalamus and the amygdala. No, we don't have time for that. 3 simple brain facts. And I think when you figure these 3 out, everything else kind of comes into play. First, the brain is pattern seeking. The brain loves patterns. You mess with someone's patterns and you start to see a darker side of them. Right? If you don't believe me, look at what's happened to our country in the last 12 months. Heard any good conspiracy theories lately? See, when we mess with our patterns, our brain says, we got to create a story to explain this. We got to create a story. Oh my gosh, they're giving, this doesn't make any sense. And I used to go through conspiracy theories at trainings and then started some fights. So now we don't. Because the other half doesn't. And then we have fights going on in the middle. So you don't say, heard any good conspiracy theories lately? And let the doers and the shakers just do their things. Okay. But those pieces. So the brain loves patterns. This is you when you go to church on a Sunday. Oh, we're Christian. God loves us. We love our friends. And you walk to your spot and someone's sitting in it. I'm not Christian anymore. I'll never forget. I was driving to church and my mom texts me and she said, someone's in our pew. We're on the right side of the church. And I kind of smiled and I texted back, well, I'm sure God's there too. And she texts me back, you think you're so funny? No, ma'am, I do not. I do not think I'm funny. I will remove new people from your spot that you have sat for 25 years, mama. The second thing is the brain is survival oriented. And for teachers and for counselors, administrators, you got to know this. Your brain is not made to think big thoughts. In fact, it does 4 duties. The first, heartbeat, digestion, breathing. The second, looks for threats everywhere. Everywhere. And you remember that whole thing I just talked about, the brain is pattern seeking? If every adult before you has been a jerk, you are too. And that child will do everything they can to bring that jerk out of you to prove they're right, because that's what the brain needs to do. Your brain will tell you stories. Okay? So think big, basic bodily functions. The second thing, survival. The third thing your brain does is it reads body language for social interactions. Do you know how hard it is to live with other people? We have to read. This is why Zoom is hard, because we can't read everything. We're reading eyes and reading faces, but we're not seeing shoulders and arms and hands are moving. Blah, 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 blah. And I do my hands a lot. It's part of my cardio. But this is where connection is number 3. The 4th thing the brain does, if all of those things are good, is higher thinking skills. Isn't that crazy? So yeah. If you have a kid disconnected, he's not learning. He's learning basic stuff like rote memorization. And think about some of your high need kids. They do phenomenal at rote memorization, don't they? But they don't do well with problem solving, thinking outside the box, collaboration, peer support. They don't do good with those connections because they're disconnected. And a disconnected kid is a dangerous kid. Get them connected. And so that if you got a kid who's worried about threats, worried about being hit, worried about hunger, we know Maslow's. But if they're not feeling safe, and a lot of people are like, Joy, we have a safe school. If the adult is not predictable, you have an unsafe environment. If you have a teacher who's going through, and let's just put the elephant in the room out there, some personal stuff, and she's a little bit more reactive, you've created an unsafe environment. And because if I can't predict your behavior, guess what? I can't trust you. And it's normal human relationships. This is why if you're at a grocery store and someone cuts in front of you, you kind of... And your body gets I'm good. They just cut in front of me or whatever. You know, some people are more reactive. Don't touch my buggy. You're just like, oh. go to a grocery store and you can see this in action. You can see it, the human nature at every Walmart in any weekend, right? And the last thing, so let's, I know I talk a lot. Here we go. The brain is pattern seeking. We like our patterns. That's safety in patterns. The brain is survival oriented. It keeps you alive. If it keeps you alive and gets you connected, it's going to think big thoughts. And the last one is the brain is a social organ. It is the only organ that develops with social interaction. And without that, it dies. It starves. Think about the worst punishment you can have in prison, isolation. And so we know infants are born, their brain is 33% the size it will be when they're an adult. At the age of five, at the end of five, it's 95%. That's gray matter, okay? White matter starts developing next. So gray matter is kind of like your floor plan for your house, how many rooms you got. Does that make sense? And the more interaction you have birth to five, that's why I love early childhood, the bigger the house you built. The white matter is the furniture. It's the connection between all the neurons that send the information. Social connection is important. They got to have a dog in the fight or they're not going to care about your rules. That's why you hear kids say, I don't care. I don't care. They don't. And guess what? If they don't feel connected to you, where do they got to get back to where they feel connected? And where is that? Home. So I'm going to do anything I can to get my tail back home. I'm going to throw a chair. I'm going to cuss you. I'm going to hit Cindy Lou Who, whose birthday is the beginning of the year, and she's the teacher set, right? I'm going to do anything I can to get back home because it's where I'm accepted, and I'm not accepted here. And I don't care that I'm not going to get a job when I'm 18 or 19. That's not what my plan is. I live in the moment because the brain, remember, is keeping you alive. So those three brain facts are pretty helpful because once you start looking at a kid through their brain, see, that's the really cool thing. Diagnoses are scary. Joy, this child's file is this thick. He's ODD, ADHD, PMD, BAD. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, so many letters, right? But what's really cool is this. Before that child is anything, they're a child. They're 10, they're 12, they're 15. So automatically we know where the brain development is, right? The diagnosis just tells me how the brain processes information. And once I look at it that way, they're not as scary. So an ODD kid, they're a pain in the tail. I know, not saying they're easy, but that tells me this child's going to process this strategy this way. So let me switch it a little. So he doesn't get the reward of that defiant, hey, do you want $1 million? No. You're like, seriously, you don't want $1 million? No, I don't. And, you know, I think one of the things we got too is I was working with a teacher. She's so fun. And we had an ODD kid. Sorry, I'm not saying it right. A child with oppositional defiant. And they had a phenomenal day. It was a great day. It was a good day. And at the end, she looked at him and she said, we had a good day today. And he said, no, we didn't. And she just crumbled. She said, yes, we did. He said, no, we didn't. And you could see it. It was just, and I'm like, stop, stop, stop. And she goes, we did this, 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 and this. Tell your mom we had a great day. Tell your mom. Da, da, da. And he's like, no, you're a terrible teacher. And it just broke my heart that she danced in the flames because she was looking for that validation for him to say, yeah, we had a good day. But if you understood his diagnosis, he's never going to give you that. So you have to get that validation through his actions and say to yourself, I need you to look internal. I need you to celebrate those baby steps. Did he throw a chair today? No, exactly. Did he move from lesson to lesson with no yelling or thing? Yeah. He's never going to look at you and say, thank you, Miss Jones, for being the best teacher ever. You're phenomenal. You've got to have it in you. And that's that whole adults first. Sorry.
No, that is why I need to go back in my teaching career and redo now that I know, now that I'm gaining all of this from you. And yes, Laura, thank you for for popping this on me now, a year into our podcast. Joy should have been way up at
number
the front.
One. Yeah. I found her when I had a 2-year-old. And I feel like you need to walk across the stage when she graduates from high school, because I think you transformed my parenting skills with her, because I was stuck in that head-on collision with her day after day after day. And when I heard you speak, I was like, okay, we're going to try some things. And I bought the book. And so now my husband watches me with her sometimes, and I'm like, that's conscious discipline. Because
she uses it on me, Joy. She'll say, right now, you're an animal brain. And when you are not, we're going to have a conversation. And I don't like you using that on me, but hey, adult first, so.
My husband, when we get in arguments, will say, don't pull that brain stuff out right now. I don't want, I'm like, I'm not, what are you talking about? But he actually said, I guess about a year ago, our children, of course, are moving on at 18, 21, and 26. And he said, I can't believe I'm saying this. He said, but when you first started that conscious discipline stuff with our oldest, he said, I thought it was never going to work. She was wild. She had, I mean, when she came to me, she already had a juvenile record, you know, and I said, you know, but look at where she is now. I mean, she's independent. She's got her own home. She's finished a career or starting a career. You know, she is who she needs to be because we gave her that power. Had we not have given her those skills, that cycle of juvenile court. Now, was she easy the whole time? Oh, no, ma'am. No. And in fact, I tell people, my oldest taught me the juvenile system. And I learned it well and learned that it is very hard to get out of, but we did. We made it out. My second one is gifted and top 1% of the nation IQ. Ooh, easy kid. Hardest kid of all three. FYI, gifted, I believe it's a curse. And then my youngest has a learning disorder. So he is the bottom of the class. And, you know, so to have all three. With one behavioral, I had a behavioral IEP, a gifted IEP. I didn't know there was such a thing, but our school, they did them. And just a regular IEP. It truly showed me how conscious discipline has to be, I will say tailored, but it always started with me. Am I composed? Am I being assertive or am I playing brain games right now with the kids? Where should you be right now? What should you be doing? You know, I tell my son, you know, he's graduated. He's going into welding. And he has a job lined up and he's supposed to leave me very soon. I don't think it's a good job. So, you know, but he thinks it's a good job. But he's already got all this welding stuff. He's ready to roll. So yesterday I said to him, what's the plan? And he's like, what do you mean? I said, I need to know your plan. And he's like, well, I don't have a plan. I said, well, good. I said, then I'll help you build it. And he's like, no, no, I have a plan. I said, good. I'll hear it today by noon. And he's like, yes, ma'am, I'll have your plan by noon. Because here's the thing. I'm not going to demand you give it to me right then because I need you to think about it. But I am going to say to you, I need a plan. And if you're not going to have one, then as your mom, I'm going to co-author one with you, right? And that's that trust because he's leaving too. Also, if anyone on this call has teenagers, this is something to think about. The brain develops from the back to the front. Higher thinking's in the front. The back is your pleasure centers. High schoolers, teenagers, the pleasure and reward center in the back, fully developed. Impulse control, emotional regulation, attention, all that's up here, and it's going through a pruning process, the second biggest pruning time in a brain development during teenage years. So if you've ever looked at your teenager and said, what were you thinking? They don't know. But when you throw that in with hormones and the development of the thinking skills, you have just a perfect storm for stupidity. No, I'm just kidding.
But risk. No, I've been a high school counselor. It all. Yes. Yes, it all. Yeah.
Yes. And I used to, before COVID, I worked with a violent teen group, you know, whatever. And I just don't like labels because in the South, we have a saying. If you give a dog a name, eventually they'll come to it. So why are we labeling our kids lazy, defiant, deviant, violent, aggressive? If I keep calling you that, you will step up to the plate, right? But anyways, one of the things these kids had was a lack of executive functioning skills. And the human brain, social organ, has to develop these skills by watching these successful adults around them. Now, successful means living. Doesn't mean making them money, okay? So if mama doesn't use impulse control, if mama doesn't pay attention, if mama's not showing empathy, you won't either. That's where teachers and counselors come in. We have to model it. And a lot of times, if you've been a teacher, probably for more than, I don't know, a year, you've met a child and you're sure it's a disability, and then you meet the parent and you're like, never mind. It's not a diagnosable illness. It's an apple tree problem. And then you're like, oh, I see now. Okay. So I'll never forget one of my kids. I was, ADHD to the, this is textbook ADHD. Textbook. And a mom, made a call with mom, made an appointment, showed up 15 minutes late. Just, I couldn't find where to park the car. I didn't know where to, but did you send me your phone number? And I was just like, whoa. In the middle, she's like, I like your shirt. And I thought, oh, okay. Thank you for your time. And I was just like, what are you talking about? Nothing. Fundraiser coming up. You going to buy some candles? Never mind. I see now. I just need to build some activities in the classroom to start working on this. So anyways, but there's the, when you look at the human brain, suddenly things start making sense. And two-year-olds are phenomenal at teaching. Two-year-olds are neuroscience in action. Like you can see it so fast with them, right? And what's really cool about twos, children under seven feel one emotion at a time. Okay, so like we can say, I was excited and scared. I was nervous yet happy. Okay, children under seven, they feel one emotion, 100% unfiltered. This is why if you give them a blue cup and they wanted the red cup, and you're like, it's a cup. And they're like, it's the world, you hate me, right? It's the worst thing. They feel one emotion. Now, why? It's really cool when you look at why the brain develops. We have to teach them how to deal with that one emotion before they start feeling two at one time.
Wow. Pretty cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So that is why humans, that interaction with humans is so important. When you get super, super, super mad, I got to teach you to deal with just mad before we deal with mad plus. It's really cool. Really cool.
You have tons and tons of stories, and you kept me on the edge of my seat whenever I heard you speak just with some of your stories. And I remember the one about there was a little boy up in a chair, and the teachers had tried everything they could to get the child out of the chair. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. So I do storytelling because the human brain loves to tell stories. And in fact, a lot of cultures outside of America, morals of cultures are passed down through storytelling. And so it's really interesting when you look at Native Americans, but when you tell a story, it lights up the limbic part of the brain, which makes you remember. So if I had told you, just do two positive choices, you would have been like, oh, heifer, she'll know what she's talking about. But if I tell the story and you're like, I can see that, I can feel it. So here's the story. There's a little boy, cute as he could be, because they all are, and he was in a chair and he was jumping. And the teacher said, get down. No. And the teacher said, I said, get down. And of course, the famous response, I said no, right? And the teacher went to get him and he tensed up. I'm ready to fight you. Let's roll. Let's roll. Okay. And I said, hang on. I said, hey, little man, listen. You have a choice. You can hold my hand and step like a giant, or hold both hands and jump like a frog. Which do you choose? And he said, step like a giant. Big step down. Now, if I dropped his hand, see, I had his hands. If I dropped his hand there, he's going right back to the chair. Hold his hand, and now we get moving. Man, you did it. You made a great choice. Let's come on over here. Let's get you set up over here. And I get him engaged over here. That's where a lot of us fail. They do what we want in the immediate, and we expect that they're going to be able to just to continue on. They're not. Because they're going to go right back to what they were doing. If I have touch, connection is eye contact, touch, present, playful. What does that mean? If I see Laura and I'm walking down the street and she and I are friends, I'm like, Laura! And she's like, Joy! And we hug each other, right? Eye contact, touch. How are you? I'm good. How is your family? Phenomenal. Yours? We're engaged. We're playful. We want to see each other. That gives us so many happy, happy brain chemicals that every time I see Laura, I'm going to get happy before we even talk to each other. It's called friendship. Pretty cool. Keeps us connected. The stronger your connection with someone, the more brain chemicals you get. This is why you can see your best friend coming and you're just like, right? And well, sometimes with our best friends, we make very bad mistakes. But that's another story. So anyway, so with my husband, sometimes, you know, I'll see him and I'm like, yay, he's here. And then other times I'm like, oh, that was a lot. And he'll laugh at me and goes, it's low brain chemical day. I'm like, yeah, I'm not feeling it today. But anyway. So when we make these connections, it's important. What if when I saw Laura, I said, Laura, and she's like, Joy, I got to go. Call me later. And walks off. I'd be like, heifer, right? It would hurt my feelings. I thought we were friends. Think about what we do to kids. Miss Joy, look what I brought from home. Put your book bag up. Come on, get your stuff out. We got to get started with morning work. Let's roll. Heifer. So what I tell teachers when we tell that story is, if you hear one of your co-teachers doing that down the hall, just walk in and go, heifer, and help them remember. Eye contact, touch, playful, present. What should you say? Miss Joy, look what I brought from home. Let me see. That is cool, but listen, here's the deal, man. We got to get busy. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to put a sticky note. It's got on here 11:15. You can read a clock, right? 11:15. I want to hear all about this. I'm going to put the sticky note on your desk. That's my and your appointment. We're going to talk about it at 11:15. Now, what's 11:15? I don't know. Maybe it's lunchtime. Who knows? But that's when you're going to talk about it. Now, what that's doing is teaching them impulse control. It's teaching them to pay attention. It's teaching them to delay gratification. And you're keeping on your schedule. It works.
So good. So good.
I am in love with Joy. I have a feeling our listeners across the country are going to be, Joy!
So it's important that the way, if we understand why we do what we do, a big one I get, and Laura, I don't know if you were, I play games with our audience sometimes, and a big one we do is working memory. And I see a lot of kids get punished for this, but I'll ask the crowd, have you ever gone into Walmart and forget where you park your car? And of course, everyone kind of goes, oh, yeah. yeah, I do it. And so we'll play. I'll say, who wants to play a game with me? And they'll say, I'll play a game with you. And I'll pick one poor person. And then what I'll say is, pretend you and I are pretty cool together. And we're going to go somewhere really fun. Don't ask me where. I'm not a fun person. Just pretend. And I said, so I'm going to meet you at Walmart and we're going to take your car. You ready? Yes. Okay, here we go. All right. Kim, are you ready to go? Yes. Where's your car? Now, the first thing that's going to happen when I ask someone that in this is they're going to go, I don't know. And then I'll shift and I take a step towards them on purpose, shoulders facing. And I'll say, what do you mean you don't know? Who drove the car here? As soon as I shift and take that step, I'm automatically igniting in their brain fear, anxiety. Now, what you'll notice if you do this with other people around them will start going, and they'll start this laugh. And then the person's going to start. it's on the third row, fourth aisle. They're going to lie. They're going to lie almost every single time. They're going to lie. And I'll say, you know that car's not there. Whose responsibility is to know where you parked your car? And every time I talk, I take another step closer. And I use that teacher voice that scares the ever-loving bejeebers out of our children. But it's not fun to adults either.
Whoa.
Chills. Then I've got chills.
We say to them, I'll tell you what, you're going to sit in this chair right here until you remember you parked your car. Now, at this point, there's usually... See, a lot of times when kids laugh at us when we're in trouble, we think it's defiance. It's actually an anxiety piece to diffuse the anger. See, you remember those awesome little two-year-olds? We taught them a long time ago when they were babies and they cried. We went, oh, no, it's okay. It's okay. Right? And the infants are like, because she's smiling. She's smiling, so maybe it's okay. Okay? And we teach them that infants and tots, if you fall down and get hurt, we go, oh, it's okay. It's okay. Come on. Get up. Okay? So we teach them smile to diffuse, even in bad situations. And that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. Think about when that two-year-old starts from you. Let's go and get in the car. No. And you're like, I said get in the car. Now, what you've done, you taught me that if I smile and laugh at you, that's going to be good. And so this is where you'll see two-year-olds go, no. And that's where you see parents go, oh, game on. You're not going to just reflect me. Right? And you want to go, we taught them that. We taught them this piece. So anyways, back to the experiment. First thing you're going to see is people are going to laugh. Second thing you're going to see, people are going to lie. Third thing you're going to see is everyone around that person is going to be very uncomfortable. Think about what you do in a classroom. Now, we'll lose a $30,000 car and we're like, hit me. A child loses a $10 book bag. They're lazy. They did it on purpose. They don't know where their stuff is. They don't care. I was doing a training for families. And a mama stood up and she goes, look, your stories are good and all, but my baby hides his bag from me because he don't want me to see his homework. And I said, ma'am, I'm going to tell you right now, if your 10-year-old is hiding homework, F's, zeros from you, you have a much bigger problem than obedience. Because see, when a child needs an adult, they should run home. My son has had 3 friends commit suicide during his high school career. When times get bad, we should run home. I want my children to come to me and say, mama, I made an F. Help me. Not let me hide this so no one knows. You have a much bigger problem than obedience if your child is hiding their need from you. And she sat down. Because see here, and I did, this is where this game came from. I said, I need you to stand up, play a game with me. She said, okay. And I said, pretend we're married. I said, now here you go. You've had a horrible day at work and you're coming home and I'm your person. Have you ever had a really bad day and you pull into the driveway and you see your person open the door and you go, what that is that's all that cortisol flooding because you're finally safe. You're finally home. Now I said, imagine if I opened the door and said, how was your day? And you're like, well, I didn't have a good day at school. And I hush. This ain't about what you tried to do. In this house, we have good days at school. We do our best. We get good grades. We don't make mistakes. So I don't want to hear you had a bad day. So I tell you what you're going to do. You're going to go in your room and you're going to think about everything you did wrong. And then you're going to come out. You're going to tell me what you did better. And I looked at her and I said, now, if I was your husband, what would you do to me? And she said, I would gut you. Exactly. Why do we do that to our children? Why, when our kids have a horrible day at school, do we meet them at the door and expect us to say, let me tell you what you did wrong? Now, does this mean there's no consequences? Oh, there's consequences. There are consequences. And here's how it looks in the conscious discipline world. My son did not turn in homework for lots of times. And I said to him, I'm like, man, your I now grades are zeros. What's going on? I see you doing your homework. What's going on? He's like, mama, I do it. I just forget to turn it in. Okay, I said, tell you what you're going to do. You're going to have a solution for me by 6 p.m. This is your problem. I need your brain to figure out your solution. If you don't have it by 6 p.m., then I will make one with you because this can't happen. Now, what would I have done? I would have had a whole nother system. He came out at 5:58. And he said, Mom, I need to go to CVS and I need to buy X, Y, and Z because I want to create this system, blah, 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 blah. Would never have been what I would have done, but he's not my brain. He never missed another homework section turned in because it was his solution and it was his problem. And I trusted him to want to do better. Now that's positive intent. See, I've worked with two kinds of teachers. One believes children are born good, and sometimes they just stumble. And others believe children are born bad, and we have to drag them to good. Once I figure out that teacher's mentality, I know how to move forward. That is where we schools struggle. Here's another example, and just tell me to hush for another question. Here's another example. I was walking in a school one day, walking to a classroom, and some schools have lines in the hall. I don't know if y'all have seen this, but you're supposed to walk on one color one way and another color the other way. But they don't tell you for visitors which color to walk on. But I'm always lost. And I'm a terrible gambler, so I always walk on the wrong line. Never fails. Well, anyways, I was walking down the hall, and I was doing emails. I was not being a good person. I was walking down the hall, and a second grader, she looked to be about 7 or 8, bumped into me, physically ran into me. And I looked down at her and I said, baby. And she said, you're on the wrong line. I said, sweetheart, okay. And I took a step, one step over, and she kept walking. Here's the litmus test if you want to know if conscious discipline will work for your school. If you think that child did exactly what she should have done, and never got off that line, and never used problem-solving skills, and never spoke up, and never said, excuse me, big white lady, I'm about to walk into you, and never voiced what she needed. That's what she's supposed to do. Stay on that line at all costs. Conscious discipline's not for you. It will aggravate you. It will frustrate you. But if you think that child should have had the strength, should have had the confidence to say to an adult, excuse me, you're on the wrong line. Or, I don't know, take a step off the line and walk around me even. Don't even speak to me. Just walk around me. Conscious discipline is probably for you. But I have seen schools, and I have worked in schools, where you stay on that line even if there's a fire. Don't get off. Get off that line.
We've seen those schools, not our own, but we have seen those schools.
Yeah. That is a good litmus test. Administrators, let's just be honest, when these kids graduate, look at how much has changed in 10 years in our world. What jobs are they going to need? Are they going to need jobs where they stay on the line? They might. In prison. Are they going to need jobs where they have to navigate social interactions, problem solving, collaboration, Zoom calls? I mean, oh my gosh. I did not know I could do 15 meetings in one day. But Zoom, COVID has shown me, oh yeah, we can back these bad boys up from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Let's go. And you're at the end of the day going, what just happened? This is that flexibility. And FYI, flexibility? Another executive function skill. Conscious discipline teaches EF skills. And in fact, in Alabama, we're starting a new project. There is a tool out called the Minnesota Executive Function Scale. It's an app. I hate apps. But it's a 2-minute game, and it measures children and adults' EF skills in real time. And they have a guide that teaches teachers how to build EF skills in the classroom. And we are looking for adults to do this so that way when I go in to coach you, I know your starting point. So instead of me assuming you have my EF skill level, which may or may not be good, I'm not saying I have great EF skills. You have to work on them every single day, FYI, because it is human nature to want to fall back to our animal patterns. Okay? But if I know where you are, I'm going to change my coaching strategy. It would be like you saying, Joy, how do I get to Australia? And I say to you, oh, here, I Googled it for you. You get on the airplane, you just fly. And you're like, well, that won't help me. I don't have an airplane. I'm like, not my problem. You asked me how to get to Australia. Told you. You're a resistant teacher. But you're like, but I don't have an airplane. I don't have the tool. Not my problem. You asked me how to do something. I told you how to do it. Do it.
Oh.
I can't. Not my problem. Now, what if I knew you didn't have an airplane? Do you have a boat? Do you have a car? Do you have a donkey? I don't know if the donkey can swim. What do you have? And if I use your tools to get you there, totally different pathway. You can do it with adults and with kids. And that's what makes understanding conscious discipline world so much easier. Instead of me assuming everyone has my EF skills, I have to understand trauma during your childhood. Stress you're undergoing now, being overwhelmed, not feeling connected to your own school family as an adult. Let's say everyone's, you know, you just don't feel like this is your home. You're just finishing out the school year and you're out the door. You're not going to have access to the best person you can be. When you're stressed, you're a shadow of who you were created to be. And that's just such a waste. So take those deep breaths and be who you were created to be and use those skills. Because it's, and I used to tell my teenagers all the time, every time you have a choice, do I want to be an animal right now or do I want to use my human brain right now? It's going to take more effort to use your human brain.
Kim and I have a lot of soapboxes that we get up on, a lot of things that we believe very passionately. And you touched on this a second ago, but we are adamant about changing the way that we teach careers and school counselors. That's one of our components. We have to teach academic lessons, social emotional lessons, and career lessons. And I heard you say that we're currently preparing students for a job that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's like you listen to us because that's what we say all the time.
You feel like you're stalking us, Joy. It's not the other. you are following us.
So talk to us. You were saying that conscious discipline can handle that, that conscious discipline helps prepare students. And so we're looking at it from a career standpoint. So tell us a little bit about conscious discipline and preparing students. And you touched on it a second ago.
So, you know, if you ask a kindergarten teacher, what skills do you want these preschoolers to come to you with? They're rarely going to say they need to write their name, number. They're going to say, I want them to sit on the carpet. I need them to pay attention. I need them to not fight with their friends, and I'll do the rest, right? And so even at that base kindergarten level, you're asking for a set of EF skills. When you are looking at careers, you need them to be flexible. In other words, going with the flow. The job market is changing. Technology is changing. COVID has changed a lot. So we need flexibility. And conscious discipline teaches that. It also teaches metacognition, which is knowing where you are. It also teaches to be attentive to tasks. Stay focused on your goals. You know, one of the things is my daughter went to school to be a trauma doctor, the middle one. And she called me at 1 a.m. and she's like, I just don't want to do it. And I was like, okay. And she said, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, what's a problem you want to fix in the world? And she said, well, I don't like the migrant children at the border. I said, how can you fix it? Next day she called and she's like, I think I want to be a lawyer. I'm bilingual in Spanish. I'm biliterate in Spanish. She said, I could be a lawyer, Mom. And I said, you could be a lawyer. You know, and my husband in the background's like, wait, do they make money? I'm like, no, but that's okay. Because she would be an ACLU lawyer and let's just let that die. She's going to be happy and that's all that matters. But the piece of it is finding that purpose. Because when you find that purpose, suddenly staying focused on your goals, paying attention, getting up every day and going with that flexibility, because you're going to have glitches in your performance. You know, do you want to read the new book? I am reading right now my executive functioning book, and I also have this bad boy that I am in love with that my husband, I took with me to the beach, and he was like, are you insane? Coaching with the Brain and Mind. Everybody else is probably out there reading, I don't know, what's the one on Netflix right now, Bridgerton or something like that. I am reading all about coaching through a neuroscience lens because I'm a nerd but also because that's my passion, is how do we get this? So yes, conscious discipline is not going to say you need to do this job, but what it is going to do, it's going to give you the skill set to navigate one of the biggest times of these high schoolers' lives, which is choosing what they're going to do for the, it sounds so locked in, for the rest of their life. And that's what I'm, my son has been in welding for 2 years, right, with Career Tech. And I'm trying to get him to understand, I don't not want you to do welding, but I do want you at 18 to branch out with some more skilled, let's get you in community college. You got your welding certificate. Let's go get your HVAC. Let's go get you your construction, because things change.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and that's what I need him to look at, is not to be so hyper-focused. So yes, the executive functioning skills are extremely important for that higher thinking, planning, cause and effect. And by the way, every time I tell you guys a story and you visualize it and you cause and effect it and you apply it to your situation, all of those are higher thinking skills. It's not something I could do with a dog. It's not stuff that we can do. It is literally you're using those higher thinking skills.
Hmm.
Remember, some of our kids don't have the cause and effect. So I have seen a lot of my teenagers that are at risk I work with. They don't understand. They're not long term. And it's something I would say to you guys, if I had to say anything, it'd be so much to say, but for high school counselors, some of our kids are coming to us and we call it a 15-second brain. They can see 15 seconds ahead. They can see 15 seconds back. That's it. This is why consequences don't work. It's called a bottom-up brain. Okay. There's a top-down brain and a bottom-up brain. It's the same science as conscious discipline. It's just got another tag on it. What that is I can see 15 seconds ahead. Morals mean nothing. Right or wrong means nothing. Consequences mean nothing. I don't care. There's no cause and effect. It literally is living in the moment. If I could relate this to you guys, when you're super stressed out, I don't know, y'all might not have this issue. A bag of chocolate, I don't know, Dove pieces, I don't know, just bear a bag of Reese's cups, and you think, I'm only going to eat the serving size of two. And then you look down and 10 are gone, and you're like, oh, did I do that? There's wrappers everywhere. What happens is you get in that 15-second mind, and you're so stressed, you're not thinking, I'm going to eat all this chocolate. Maybe you buy a bottle of wine and you stick a straw in it instead of getting a glass. You're not thinking of that 15 seconds more than that short-term goal. Trauma kids who grow up in poverty, kids who grow up under constant chronic stress, can't make long-term decisions. Their parents or their people they live with, their families, and I'm just, this is some new science out there. If you saw during COVID, you remember at the beginning when the first big unemployment came out, okay, and it was like $600 and everybody was getting these $800 checks a week, okay? Some of us whose husbands got laid off took that money and shoved it into savings because we didn't know how long it would last, okay? So we tucked it away because I'm like, look, I don't know how long his factory is going to be closed down. I'm married to a blue-collar man. COVID has hit us hard, but we're going to move forward. Other families went to Instagram and, for old people, Facebook, and were doing hashtag quarantine life, hashtag COVID vacation, hashtag, and suddenly people were like, well, we're not going to give them any more money. They're not saving their money. They're blowing through it. What are they doing? You understand what neuroscience says about poverty. You understand that poverty makes you scarce. You're looking for your resources, okay? Short-term. Yeah. Long-term planning is down the road. That's a higher thinking skill that comes from being out of poverty. And they've actually done some studies on this with people in India, with the sugarcane farmers. This is really cool. Before the harvest, they drop 15 IQ points. They get one harvest a year. Half the year they live in poverty, half the year they live wealthy. You're like, well, why don't they just save the wealthy? And be middle class the whole time. They can't. They get that money, they spend it all, and then they live in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what poverty does to the thinking brain. It is what it is. And so when you deal with these high school students who have come from poverty, a lot of one time, this little one guy I was working with, he had gotten in trouble for robbing a 90-year-old woman. And I said, man, what are you doing? And he said, I had to get mines. And I said, what? He said, I got to get mines. Mr. Way, I got to get mines. I got to get mines. I said, you hustle every day. You can get yours whenever you want. He said, but I need it right then. No long-term cause and effect. It is, I got to get it right now. And if it means hurting someone, I'm going to get it. Does that make sense? So when you're working with these high school students who have been in trauma, stress, unpredictable environments, they can't look down the road. They can only look survival, next step. I just got to get me till tomorrow. And some of them aren't getting till tomorrow. They're just getting to the next hour. And those, I don't want to say they're dangerous kids, but they're the ones you have to really help build. And so you can't really say, okay, what are you going to do 5 years down the road? That question will send some of them into absolute anger fits. Have you ever asked a kid that? What are you going to do 5 years down the road? And they'll literally, what do you mean? I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll probably be dead. I don't know. What, I mean, they'll literally explode, some of the kids I've talked to. But if you say to them, oh, we got to get you to where you need to be. If you were to do anything, what would you want to do? I don't know. Okay. That's an open-ended question. Let's drop it down to two positive choices. Do you want to do something with your hands or do you think you want to work in an office? I don't know. Okay, we're going to go a little bit lower down now. Let's explore what jobs would look like working in an office, because I see that you have some strengths and some personal skills, and maybe you'd like more of that organizational world. And that's how you slowly build it up. Even with kids who aren't teenagers, give an open-ended question. If they explode, it means their brain's not ready. Drop it down to two positive choices. So for those of you who work with little bitties like me, little bitties, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever, here's what you say. I miss my mommy. What do you want to do? I don't know. Drop it down. Do you want to draw her a picture? Or do you want to read a book? I don't know. Let's draw a picture. Draw a picture of you reading a book. Come on, I'll go with you. And what that does is it brings it down to where the brain can process it. You can use that too with high schoolers if they're not staying focused. Because what that means is they just haven't developed those skills. And that's what they need you guys for, to scaffold it up.
So simply said, so well said, so understandable, so doable. It's just like, I want everybody to hear this, everybody to know this. This is so good.
It is so good.
What about the students, if I may get more specific, and what about the students who may have, we're seeing more in our schools that may have some, and you probably work with these students, and I have it. So this is a little self-seeking, I'll be honest. I have a child with disabilities and he has major autistic tendencies. Mm-hmm. And what about those students that we see in school that we're dealing with that may have a diagnosis of ID or diagnosis of autism? Or how does this work for those students?
So that is phenomenal. So there's a lot of interesting research out right now about autism, and I just got done reading a book by Mona Delahook called Beyond Behaviors, where she actually proposes that autism is a sensory disorder in which we've seen it as a social disorder, but there's a lot of information hitting the brain. Now, this is just do not hunt me down and be like, you're lying. I'm just saying something I read. It's okay. Don't call the governor. Okay. Hey, I don't want to hear from you today. But there's so much information hitting the brain that it disrupts social interactions. Okay. So that's interesting to me, because when I work with children with autism, they don't get the same reward that I do when I see Laura or when I see Kim or when I see my husband, right? Their relationships are kind of, I love to say, they're on their terms. They have their relationships on their terms. One thing about kids who do not get that dopamine hit from relationships is they do get a dopamine hit from a blue light. In fact, that's why a lot of people love to give kids, especially kids with autism and kids with ADHD. In fact, there's a new ad on TV that I want to call the company and be like, are you insane? Because it's teaching EF skills through an app. That's not going to be transferable. That's not transferable. Just because the little bear is doing what I want him to do is not transferable. So yeah, okay, it's here, but the strength, the neuro connection is transferred. Okay, so kids crave that dopamine hit. You can get it from interactions. You can also get it from completing a task. So if you're working at home and you're by yourself and you do an entire puzzle and you put that last piece in, you're like, yes, smartest person in the world, da, 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 right? You're actually getting that same brain reward. That reward center is going, we are good, okay? When you give a kid with this awesome thing, this is an old phone too. I should not be showing my 6X. When you give a kid an iPhone, that blue light lights up the same brain. ADHD kids love it. Autism kids love it. Kids with autism, kids with ADHD love it because they're getting the reward quick. And that blue light is giving them the same. Some people have said it's 10 times the amount. Some people said it's 100 times the amount of brain chemical, but it's more. It's even more than when I talk to Laura or when I talk to Kim. This is why when you're on Facebook, you feel like you're having relationships with people you haven't spoken to in 15 years because you're seeing the pictures and you're getting that blue light and it's the same reward, which is what makes you scroll. Do you know who hires more neuroscientists than anybody? Game programmers, social media platforms. When you look into how they set these things up, phenomenal. Okay, why am I going into all this? Because you will see kids on these things constantly, and people like Joy, they're doing so good. They played their social emotional game. I don't know why I'm talking like that. They played their social emotional game, and they did phenomenal. And I'm like, not transferring. There's no transfer. So let's go back to the whole puzzle thing. Kids who struggle with relationships usually love jobs. Love them. And if I can give you a task that involves you helping someone, I am starting to build a new brain pathway between reward for completing a task, reward with making eye contact, touch, playful, present. Does that make sense? I am building new brain pathways. Now, is it going to be beautiful? Probably not. But if I can get you to start making those steps, we're good. So what this would look like, let's say you had, I don't know, a 12-year-old. Let's go a little bit older. And maybe you find his strength. What is your strength? Okay, you got to find one. This is terrible. I used to have a poster on my wall of every kid's strength. And so whenever I needed something, I'd look up and be like, Sarah's good at that. Call Sarah. Okay. Oh, so-and-so's good at that. Call so-and-so. And I had their strengths up. And it helped me. It highlighted how they were unique and special in the classroom, even though they might not be straight-A students. But also, if I needed a peer helper, I could be like, oh, she's phenomenal. And I didn't always choose the same one. All right. So know their strength and then say, hey, Malachi, you are really good at doing two-step multiplication. Can you help James with this? I wrote this test up and I need to check the answers. That makes sense. So in other words, you're pairing them up to work. The other thing is, Malachi, we got a problem. Let me tell you what the problem is, dude. Every time we come in from lunch, everyone throws their bags on the floor. And I keep telling them to put the bags up, but they're not listening. I need your help, man. What are we going to do? Wait. Before you do it, I need you to work with someone on it because this is a big problem. It's going to take two brains to do it. You know what, Malachi? Who do you want to work with? You pick. So then he has to problem solve with the peer that he's comfortable with. The next step is problem solve with the peer you choose. You see what I'm saying? You want to, yeah. That's how you scaffold these relationships. Well, a lot of times what we do is we put them with a higher performing peer, which just shuts them down. And even when I'm getting them used to working in small groups, you choose the two people to work with you. Really? Sure. Here's the deal, though. Let's just go ahead and talk about this. You're going to choose the two people you're going to work with. So you're going to choose the two people. You're going to get the job done before that timer goes off, before 11:30. Deal? If you do not, if I hear laughing, if I hear that y'all are not staying on task, I will split you up. You will go to this chair, you will go to this chair, and you will go to this chair, and you will do this task alone. Do you understand? Yes, ma'am. Which do you choose to work in my group? Great. Can't wait to see at 11:30. What's going to happen? You always finish out with that positive expectation. And what that does is it starts to build a positive intent, but also trust, and it gives them a goal that they can easily meet. And that's what we want to do. Scaffolding, right? We get you to where you're, we know you're, it's not comfortable, but we give you what you can to go a little bit higher. That zone of proximal development, for those of us who have never had a goal that was too big, we do little steps up there. And that's what we have to do. And it works for all ages. All ages. I always tell this story. I had a whole, when I first started teaching, yeah, I was an idiot and still am. And my kids walked down the hall and they were loud. And so they're walking down the hall and the second grade teacher snitched on us to the principal. Snitch. Mm-hmm. What happens to snitches? But you know the rhyme. Okay. So brought the kids into the class and I'm like, guys, we got a problem. When we walk down the hall, we're too loud. And Miss Robinson has told the principal, what are we going to do? Solution number one, kill Miss Robinson. Okay. I'm good with that. It's a felony. And she has a cat at home. Solution number two, get a class pet. No, can't have a cat. Can't have a cat at school. was they would walk down the hall with a finger on their lip. Nope, doesn't work. We've been trying that, not working. Solution number four, walk down the hall with two fingers on your lips. That way, if this one forgets, the other one remembers. That's the stupidest thing I ever heard, but let's try. It worked because they voted on it. They came up with it. And so when we started down the hall, I would remind them, remember, guys, y'all chose two on the fingertips. Let's see you go. I want to see your solution work because y'all the one who thought it up. You're a lot smarter than me. Let's roll. That's a simple class, but imagine if you had a bigger problem and then you let them problem solve it. As long as it falls in legal jurisdiction, why not? I used to let my kids choose where they went on a field trip. What? Yeah. You want to go here or you want to go here? Sign up. Let's vote on it. Let's talk it through. Which one's going to give us the most bang for our buck? And that gives everyone a voice in the room. Are there going to be people disappointed? Heck yes. And that's okay. That's another life lesson to learn too. I think we spend way too much time making sure everyone feels happy. And that's a huge detriment to our kids right now. It is okay to feel sad. It is okay to feel frustrated. It is okay to feel hungry. It is okay to feel bored. I am not your clown. It is okay to feel something not good. But think about it. Go out to a restaurant. You'll see 3-year-olds. 2-year-olds. No, my kids were little. We played games with them. We looked at the lobsters in the lobster tank. We hangman. We did whatever we could. That's called parenting. Co-regulation, yeah. Right? I'm hungry too. Why did they get my chicken nuggets? Well, they got here before us. Those are not your chicken nuggets. I want those chicken nuggets, right? I mean, it's hard when we take kids to restaurants. It makes no sense. That's why when they come to school, someone bumps them in the hall and it's World War III. Yeah. Because no one has taught you to feel anything but happy. And in fact, take your phone. Disassociate from reality. Don't feel hunger. Don't feel anger. Don't feel anxious. Don't feel. Disassociate. And when your food comes, I'll bring you back in. And we as a society rewards that. I was flying home from Orlando, and I went through the Orlando airport. I don't know if y'all have ever been through the Orlando airport, but if Disney's the happiest place on earth, Orlando airport is the saddest place on earth. It's a horrible airport. In fact, if I ever have to go south to Florida again, I'll fly through Cuba. And so my flight got delayed because God has a sense of humor. And if you're miserable, he's going to make you stay longer. And so my flight got delayed and there were two children sitting across from me. One was three, one was five. One had a Switch, Nintendo Switch, and one had like an iPad. They had headphones on and they were playing those games. The little girl at the end, she was four. And I know she was four because it was her birthday. And every single soul that walked by, she told them, "It's my birthday. It's my birthday. It's my birthday." And the mom said, "Shh, you have to say excuse me. Keep your voice low. Come on now. You got to say excuse me. Sit down here and read this book with me. Come on, let's read this together." People walked over to the two children in front of me and said to the parents, "Your children are so well behaved. You're doing such a good job with your children." Now I'm going to ask kindergarten teachers, which one do you want to walk into your room? When the flight finally boarded, the parents said to the children, "Take your headphones off. Come on, let's go. We got to load up on the plane." And the little boy at an airport with a huge window with airplanes flying and landing took off his headphones and looked out and said, blinked and said, "Oh, are we at an airplane?" He totally missed. Think about all the awesome conversations that could have been had with that parent standing at that window with that kid saying, "See that airplane taking off? There's people on there. See it coming down. Which one do you think is ours? I wonder how much gas goes in there. What should we look at?" But instead, opportunity missed. The little girl at the end, was she loud? Yeah. Was she cute? Yeah. Did she have a matching shirt with her mama because they just left Disney? But yeah. She was learning how to navigate social interactions, understanding people's perception of loudness. And I have to be respectful of others. Not everyone cares. It's my birthday. The mom said to the dad of the two in front of me, "I'm so glad our children are well behaved. That would be awful." And I just thought to myself as a teacher, your kids are probably who I'm called for in about a month.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to have the same skill set. Parenting is hard. Parenting is messy. And if you're exhausted at the end of the day, you don't think you can do it again tomorrow, you did it right.
Oh, preach. So good. And I want to say, and I know you've seen this too, Laura, there are educators who are educating that way.
Mm-hmm.
There are educators who are handing an iPad to a student and taking it up at the end of the day. And they are not learning critical thinking. They're not learning collaboration. They're not learning these career skills. And so it's sad when we see it in homes, but when you see it in schools, I think it's doubly sad. It is an easy way out, and you're right, kids are addicted to it, they enjoy it, but they're not, and I'm not, we don't say throw the baby out with the bathwater, because we do understand it's here to stay, but it needs to be, we talk about experiences, kids need experiences, because that's what marks time, that's how we have memories. So gosh, you are, it's just like you're one of us, Joy.
I think counselors are really going to be slammed hard August of 2021. We are going to be repairing the damage that we have done from COVID for years. Years. We have taken a year, and some schools went virtual. My son's school went hybrid, but he was virtual, and then he got to go back. But when he went back, he was still on the same computer with headphones, just sitting in a classroom.
Yes.
We couldn't give more to the virtual kids than the, I get it. But we have no idea. We've been so hyper-focused on, okay, we got to make sure no one falls behind. But we literally have, I don't think we understand the impact of what this has done to our kids for a while. It is... What our focus next year needs to be is building those executive functioning skills. building up our adults in our world with adult resilience, because if they're not strong, our kids are not going to be strong. They're not going to have that model of flexibility. And we also have got to prepare ourselves for these kids that kindergarten looked weird. First grade looked weird. Sixth grade looked weird. Can you imagine? My son was a senior this year. He didn't want to walk. He didn't want to go to prom. He didn't want to do it. He's like, Mom, I'm just done. My last year was last year. I'm just clicking a box right now, because it took away the social pieces. And that I'm interested to see what the outcome is going to be for our kids, not academics, the other side. Yeah. The career side. What is it going to look like when we have a group of disconnected children graduating who have had basically a year and a half of some pretty weird social interactions? Yeah. What's it going to look like for our little tiny ones moving on up? Our first grade teachers are now, I'm just going to be honest, they're going to have to take more of that SEL approach just because it has been gone. Suddenly, sitting in carpet circle time is a little different from sitting in your house singing a song with the teacher than it is if someone's bumping you on the carpet, you know, or recess time, PE time, all of those social times that we kind of look as, and I hate to say a break for a teacher, but those social times do just as much for neuroscience and brain development as those amazing lesson plans you guys write. So we don't know, but I would, if I was a counselor, be very prepared, I don't know how, for what's coming for next year, because we took neuroscience. The brain is pattern seeking. COVID broke our patterns. The brain is survival oriented. We became so focused on survival, we dropped connection. And the brain is a social organ. We took away eye contact, touch, present, playful. We took out three basic fundamental brain facts with COVID for a year and a half. We are just now starting to emerge. What's going to be the outcome? The great thing is the brain is plastic. It's resilient. But it has to be given the opportunity to be.
Oh, that's so good. I hope that everybody hears this and takes this as a challenge and looks at this. And what I'm afraid is that we'll have educators who say, hey, that worked. Let's just continue with that computer. And even before I was seeing more and more of, even before COVID, I was seeing more and more of that. So, gosh, Laura, we have taken a lot of your Memorial Day joy when we're recording this, and we appreciate you coming on today. And do you come into schools and do you speak, and is it just Alabama? Talk to us about how we can get more joy.
Yeah. So I try to support schools as much as possible. People can contact me through Joy. joy.winchester@ece.alabama.gov. You can call my cell phone, 334-318-2257. That's usually how people find me. Some people find me on Facebook. I'm not hard to find. But if you are looking for school-wide implementation, consciousdiscipline.com has trainers that will come to your school. I know there's a ton of money being pumped down right now to schools. Conscious discipline is recognized by CASEL and by SAMHSA. So it can be used in IEPs. It can be used as a school-wide implementation. We actually have schools who have done it. Is it easy? No. But you know what? Usually things that are worth it aren't.
If it was, in the long run, it would make your life easier. I think in the long run, it's one of those things, put the hard work in, and then it's a whole lot more rewarding.
And let me, and I know I'm talking a lot, but this might help some administrators with this. So whenever you propose a change model, this is something to really think about. If you were trying to take a group of tourists up a mountain, and you said, okay, everybody, get on the bus, we're going up. 30% of those people are going to be like, yes, we're on the bus. bus. Let's get on the bus. And they run, they get on the bus. They've even got the bus t-shirts, right? I mean, they signed up. And these, you love these people in your school. They are the doers. They are the ones that, you know, you're like, I think we should have a luncheon. And they've already ordered the food. I mean, they're phenomenal. We love these people. Then you got this bottom 30%. And they're like, I read a story that the buses crash. I saw the bus is going to blow up. The bus is dangerous. Are there seat belts? I'm not getting on that bus. I'm walking up the mountain. And you're like, but it's a brand new bus. The buses are dangerous. I have a cousin in Saskatchewan. She died on the bus. She died on the bus. And you're just like, it's a freaking bus. Get on the bus. No, not get on the bus. That's your bottom 30%. No matter what you give them, they're going to think it's the worst idea ever. You can say, I'm going to give you $1 million. They're going to be like, oh, taxes, right? This are these people. They are everywhere. And usually, this is the organization. You got your top 30 who are like, and your bottom 30, they're like, another curriculum, another year. Next year, we'll be back to beating the children. Why are we even doing this, right? Just how it is. Top 30, bottom 30. As an administrator, you got that middle 40. So people always say to me, Joy, who do you target? Do you ever work with the top 30? Yeah, they're fun. They keep me going. They keep me energized. But that middle 40%, they're watching. They're watching that top 30 get on the bus and they're saying, are they okay? They get a good seat? They all right? I think they're good. But the bottom 30, they're listening to it. But they that lady had that aunt die. If you can shift that 40 up, you're golden. What's going to happen to that bottom 30? Well, they either get on the bus or they get left behind. And as a principal, you make that decision. Is it worth losing possibly 30% of your staff? And I'm just saying, this is national statistics when we implement conscious discipline school-wide. Because conscious discipline's adult first, and some adults don't want to do the work. It is what it is. And that's their choice. There's other schools out there that will take them in, and they'll be just fine. That is going to be your kicker as an admin. Grab your 40, shift them up. And with that 40 and that 30, suddenly you have a 70% majority. And the bottom 30 is like, okay, it's getting a little lonely down here. Let me get on the bus or let me get left behind. As an admin, target that middle 40. Pull out one of them that's like, I'm kind of interested. You're kind of interested. You're leading the group discussion today. Let's roll. That makes sense? Did I hear you say you were kind of interested? Because I bought you a t-shirt. Put that t-shirt on. You're leading the cheer today. Yeah. Conscious discipline. Woohoo. In other words, don't always lean on your top 30s. You lean on them for everything. They're going to lead your fundraisers, your everything. Go after that middle 40. Because if that middle 40 slips down to the bottom 30, you won't have a chance. Something I've seen watching it.
Yeah. Gosh, Joy, thank you so much. Laura, do you have anything else that's before? I just don't want to let her go. I'm going to be honest with you. If I could just tote her around all day long with my...
There is so much more. And, you know, we'll just have to have you on again because we have scratched the surface of conscious discipline. And I feel like it is such a game changer to implement and just... the small changes that I was able to make in my own personal life with my kids, but also...
And with me, Kim, your other child.
The way that I help Kim, but then also in the way that I interact with students, just some of the phrases that I changed. And so there's so much more, and we would love to have you on again.
Good deal. Thank you.
Didn't you love Joy?
I loved so much of what she was saying, and I can say to you, thank you for bringing Joy into my life.
Do you mean that the person, or do you mean that the emotion? Are you telling me
both? Because
you're currently expressing that I personally bring Joy, the emotion, into your life
only through the personhood of Joy, the conscious discipline.
Okay, just I had to be clear.
And why did you not have her on earlier? She is so good. She gave so many practical tips, and I'm excited to read more and dig into more of this. And I want to share this with my staff. So, and she's an Alabama person. That was exciting.
Did you steal my Conscious Discipline book, by the way?
No, I asked you to borrow it and you acted very rude about it.
Well, it's just like, funny that now I can't find it and I saw your hands on it.
No, no, you did not. I specifically said, may I borrow your Conscious Discipline? And you began to name things that had not been returned. It hurt my feelings, which you know are generally impossible to hurt. So I would not borrow your Conscious Discipline book for love or money.
Mm, okay.
I'm buying my own. Thank you very much. But all yes, right. Awesome. Awesome work, Joy.
I have a story for you. Do you have a story for me, or am I flying solo on this?
Well, you know what? It's always coming out of your mouth orifice. I have a story. It leaves me little time for any storytelling of my own. So go ahead.
Let me ask you this. How frequently do we do a podcast?
Weekly.
So how much time do you have to prepare to find a story is what I'm asking.
I literally saw you while the guests were on looking for a story. So do not give me that. And you like to talk, so go right ahead.
Okay.
I want to hear the story.
Okay. This is actually coming at us from Lee County, Alabama, so not too far away from us. But there was there's a school in Lee County, Alabama, their school's custodian, and it says beloved custodian. Then he became the special education paraprofessional. He achieved his dream a few weeks ago of graduating college. And now he's becoming a PE teacher. So you know how in so many of our schools, our high school graduates do a walkthrough?
Yeah.
And the students line the hallways. Well, he got to do his walkthrough in his beloved school where he has been the custodian and then the paraprofessional. But it says that when he graduated from high school, his father passed away. Well, actually, his father passed away when he was in elementary school. So his grandparents helped raise him, and he wanted to attend college, but it was hard for him to find a job with benefits. And so a friend told him about a custodian job at the school, and so he was hired, and immediately it says he distinguished himself with an unstoppable work ethic and friendly demeanor. The students loved him, and so did the teachers. And soon his dream of attending college became a shared mission. He met with the school's counselor, and after that, she assembled a group of teachers to really support him, and he called those educators his school moms. And it took him 8 years to get through college. It says they weren't easy, and they involved a lot of heartache and struggle, but he did it. And so now he is going to be a PE teacher.
That is so inspiring. And I have heard those stories before.
I know
it. You know, who have a dream, and it may not come easy, but they persevere. And that's so good for our students to see. So I'm glad that happened in an education setting.
So and I'm so glad that his students got to see him achieve this dream. And there's a video of his walkthrough, and it shows him hugging all of his school moms, as he called them.
Oh,
I know. Isn't that so sweet?
That is so sweet.
Hey, how about this? We would love it if you would go on and rate and review our podcast. I want to read this one to you, if I may.
Okay.
I find these podcasts to be relevant and valuable to all educators, not just school counselors. The guests they host are heavy hitters in the educational world. Super impressive and informative. Isn't that so great?
That's so sweet. Did you thank your mom?
Well, guess what? It was my husband. So I would appreciate it if you guys would go rate and review us so that one won't be right up there at the beginning, but he stands by every word. So.
Oh, that's sweet.
But really, it's embarrassing. So somebody else go rate and review this thing so that we can get his off of there.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, you can find us on Facebook in our Counselor Accents group. Thanks for listening.